So, the book of Ecclesiastes has long fascinated many people. Some feel it is the most puzzling book in the Old Testament, while others have used it to teach that man ceases to exist after death. As with all Old Testament scripture, it is not a book that Christians should ignore. It was written for our learning and our admonition. It is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, and for instruction in righteousness. In the Hebrew Bible, the book is called, and I'm going to try to pronounce it, Koheleth. It's spelled with a Q, which means preacher. The term suggests one who speaks to an assembly. The translators of the Septuagint called it Ecclesiastes with K's instead of C's, which also means preacher. The word is derived from ecclesia, meaning assembly. Written sometime between 940 and 931 BC, the book has special relevance today in our materialistic society, for it helps us to see the vanity of many earthly pursuits. It contains lessons for all, but especially for the young who have so much to lose should they make the wrong choices early in life. There is a disagreement about who wrote Ecclesiastes. Many scholarly Bible commentators contend that the book was not authored by King Solomon. They note that there is no mention of Solomon by name anywhere in the book, and the phrase "son of David, king in Jerusalem," which is in verse 1 of chapter 1, could have been a broad description of someone who was faithful to God but not necessarily a physical son of David. The scholars also contend that the suffering and injustice described in portions of the book would not have been consistent with Solomon's reign as king, which was an unparalleled time of peace and prosperity. Finally, the scholars find it troubling that Solomon could write so eloquently in chapter 12 on life and its meanings when there is no indication that he ever repented of his idolatry brought on by marrying multiple wives with various religious beliefs. So they conclude that the book was authored sometime following the return from Babylon captivity in 597 through 538 BC. Jewish and early Christian tradition does attribute the book to Solomon. As stated earlier, the author identifies himself as the son of David, king in Jerusalem, and refers to himself as the preacher. And I've given you several scriptures there. Internal evidence points to Solomon. We note the references to his wisdom, his building activities, his wealth, and his activities after writing this book. Solomon was a brilliant man, and other than Jesus Christ, was considered to be the wisest man to ever live. In addition to Ecclesiastes, Solomon wrote most of the book of Proverbs. Solomon's wisdom is described to have surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. People came from all over the world to hear his wisdom. Even the Queen of Sheba traveled from the ends of the earth, which was southern Arabia, to hear Solomon's wisdom. And we know that from 1 Kings. So let me ask you a question. According to 1 Kings 3, 7 through 13, why was God so generous in granting Solomon wisdom? He asked for it. He just simply asked for it. He did not ask for a long life, and he did not ask for riches for himself, but he asked for the wisdom, and God granted it. I've given you just a brief outline of the book. You can look at that more in depth later.
Hey, man, if he was so wise, why did he get messed up?
With all those women? I don't know. Connie's...
Because all things are meaningless.
He may have regretted it.
I bet he did.
Connie's over here clearing her throat like she knows something... We don't know. Back then, multiple wives was common, but I don't know. Did you know the answer? Is that why you're asking?
Sure, but I'm just letting you
know. Oh, okay. Thank you. The key word, you need a handout, Jared? You got one? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The key word in this book is vanity. Are meaningless, depends on your translation. In the Hebrew, the word is translated vapor, mist, smoke, and breath. occurs 35 times in 29 verses. It means futility, uselessness, nothingness. According to Solomon in Ecclesiastes 1:2, all is vanity. We find the phrase under the sun for the first time at the end of verse 3 in chapter 1. It is found 29 times in 27 verses. It does not mean people never invent anything new. Rather, Solomon is saying no matter how much we think things change, life is still the same. It suggests that this message of vanity is true when we leave God in the afterlife out of the equation. There's nothing new under the sun to give purpose and meaning to life, but God can give you something new. Another message in this book is the importance of serving God throughout life, which the preacher states in his final words of chapter 12, verse 13, "Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." These are wise sayings that will prod our thinking and exhortations that will provide stability and direction for living. Questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Going back to earlier comment, does wisdom insulate one from temptation?
No, we're all going to face temptation.
So Solomon did as well.
He did. I feel like he did. Yeah.
I also think the wisdom that he gained through all of those things he went through to come to the realization that, as he wrote in the last chapter of Ecclesiastes, God is what you should be pursuing, not all of this.
Yeah.
As to be for us to look at his life, don't do as he did, but do what he said.
Yeah.
Not like Paul said, be examples of me. He said,
right.
Be like me. So, you learn from that. We can take what he went through and build our lives accordingly, I think that will help to realize our wisdom that we should have when we go through trials, because we do go through trials. There are different things that you're going to learn from, and that's God to give you.
Yeah.
What you're supposed to have learned from those situations so that you don't do it again or help somebody else not go through that.
But sometimes we don't follow we don't follow what someone tells us not to do or what we should do. We usually have to find out ourselves, don't we? And sometimes that wisdom comes with that, but sometimes we have to pay a price for that. Jared?
Yeah,
well,
I'm just saying the Bible teaches us to recognize the main thing.
Yeah.
To recognize the temptation, to recognize the sin, to recognize the wonderful.
Right, and that comes with wisdom, to knowing that certain thing may be a temptation. Larry?
You'll know if a teenager, you knew better than that.
Yeah.
And you did.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Sometimes I knew better than that.
Yeah. Did it anyway, didn't you? Yep. Anybody else? Okay, who would like to read verses 1 through 11?
The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes towards the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full to the place from which the rivers come. There they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times, therefore, up before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after.
Okay, thanks, Connie. So how does the author describe himself in verse 1?
The
preacher?
Preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. So how would you sum up the writer's assessment of life as expressed in verses 2 through 4?
Meaningless.
Meaningless. What else?
Vanity.
What?
Vanity.
Vanity is vanity. Vanity of vanities. How about verse 4? What does verse 4 say?
People come and go throughout time, but the earth remains forever.
Exactly. We're all going to usually loop around to what other people have done in the past, but the earth remains the same. And we're going to actually dissect that a little bit more right now. What does Solomon say about the world in the latter part of verse 9? Wait, I skipped a page, didn't I? Hold on. Let me back up. What is the key question that this book seeks to address in verse 3?
He's asking what's the purpose of life, what's the meaning of it all?
Yeah, what profit is a man for all this he does, he toils for under the sun? So, what remains forever in verse 4? Someone flip over to Matthew 24:35 and read that. Matthew 24:35. Some of you know where I'm going. Who has it?
Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away.
All right. Ecclesiastes 1:4 says the earth remains forever. Matthew 24:35 says heaven and earth will pass away. Do we have a conflict here?
No, we don't.
Why? Why not?
Well, the beginning of Ecclesiastes is poetry. If you're looking for hard teaching like is in Matthew, that's not poetry. It'll pass away.
It's the truth.
This is poetry where it's, you know, just broad terms. I mean, your eyes are as big as the moon. Well, they literally aren't. But you can't get a hard teaching. Maybe I should phrase it like that. You've got to be careful with poetry. Same thing with the Psalms. You have to be careful.
They're not literal. What you're saying is it's not always literal.
Sure.
Okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Anybody else have an argument? Shane?
Well, I was going to say, both statements are comparative statements.
Okay.
So in Ecclesiastes, when he says the earth remains forever, what he means is in comparison to the lifespan of human beings, the earth is here forever. So the earth is here thousands of years, right? And yet man comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes. When we look at Matthew, it's also a comparative statement, but Jesus is making a broader eternal comparison statement in saying, yes, the earth has been here for all this time, but even the earth will go away. But when the earth goes away, God still remains and his word still remains. So they don't compete with each other because they're different in comparative statements in their nature and the way they're intended to be applied. That's kind of the way I see it.
Okay, Rob?
Yeah, I was just really going to compliment what Shane already said.
Okay.
He's describing kind of like the seasons. He's describing the sun coming up and
right
down. So he's saying there's this cycle, this continuous cycle, that just keeps on going, and people come and go. So.
Okay. Anybody else?
When all is said and done, the only thing that still remains constant should be our faith in our Creator and His plan for.
Well, that's definitely true. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But Shane and Gary are saying the same thing. Were y'all understand what they were saying? Jared?
Well, you know, just to elaborate further, is it Revelation or John? I, John Solomon. You have any words on the one? That's the word, John.
I don't know what you're referring to. I'm sorry.
The passage, Revelation or John?
Revelation. I saw a new heaven and a new earth.
Oh. Okay.
Former heaven and earth have passed away.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, I mean, it could be.
Okay. Ecclesiastes and Matthew are talking about sort of different things, but sort of the same thing, but they're coming from different directions. Is that safe to say? Ecclesiastes is poetry. not necessarily always literal, for Matthew is a hard literal teaching. So that's why sometimes people will say sometimes, well, the Bible contradicts itself, and they'll use something like this for their argument. But they don't know the context of what's going on. They haven't studied it enough. So
in reference to the lifespan of any one man, the earth is forever.
Yes. Yep. So any other comments or questions about that? So Solomon also makes a case that creation is teaching us that life is a continuous cycle that never changes. In verses 4 through 7, what are the illustrations that Solomon uses to describe the natural cycle of life? Just yell them out as you see them.
Sunrise and sunset.
All right, rising and setting of the sun.
Wind.
The whirling cycles of the wind.
Mountain streams.
Mountain streams.
Streams flow down to the sea.
Okay, water cycle. And one more.
Generations.
The generations, passing of generations.
How far can you travel east?
Not very far.
Yes.
Not very far. That's different from north and south. There's a distinction between north and south, isn't it? But not east and west. So how does Solomon illustrate the consistency of creation when compared to a man's life? Verses 5, 6, and 7. Let's look at verse 5 first. What's his illustration in verse 5? We just talked about it. Sun rises and the sun sets. In verse 6, he's using the wind, blowing toward the south and turning toward the north. And then 7, the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Of course, we could get into politics here and say, well, if all the icebergs melt, does that mean the world's going to flood? But I won't ask that question. What does Solomon conclude in verse 8 about what he observes in verses 2 through 7? What does he conclude? What is his conclusion of verse 8 about 2 through 7? Okay.
That's, tired.
We get tired, we get wore out.
Repetitive.
Same old, same old.
He's been there, done that.
Exactly. Nothing new under the sun, is it? Anybody have a translation that says something a little bit different?
Boring.
Boring? That's a good word. I saw a cartoon about boring, just I can't think what it was. So what is never satisfied in verse 8? What is never satisfied?
See or hear something new.
All right, the eye with seeing, the ear with hearing. So this is really confusing here as we go into this. So keep in mind that we are living in a world with constant technological change. How are Solomon's words in verse 9 and 10 still true today? If life is just a continuous cycle of wind, rain, water, life, whatever, how is that true today? That things, that
human behavior has not substantially changed from the time even before Solomon, even to now. So whether, you know, we can look at technology can change, but human reaction to human behavior, human sin, all of that
has
pretty much already happened before.
Okay.
Plus, maybe I see this a little differently, but...
Well, you're from Indiana. We have to understand.
But to me, the reference to the sunrise and sunset, part of that and how it relates to today is everybody's always going after what's new, what's next, what's new. The sun rises tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow, and
yep.
tomorrow.
Yep.
What's new? What's next? What's new? What's next? To me, you can say, well, what's next is new.
Yeah.
But the pursuit of what's next and what's new has never changed.
there's always been the pursuit of what's on the horizon, what's coming next, what's going to happen tomorrow, what's going to happen next year. And that is a consistency, and I think what he's saying here, that is a tiresome consistency of mankind, because mankind is on this unending spree for what is next.
And we can't ever catch it.
And we want to see what's next, hear what's next, always what's next, what's next, what's next, and it's tiresome.
Yeah, John?
Innate curiosity is a gift from God.
Okay. Jared first, and then Rob. Jared?
Yeah. In perspective, Bible teaches new life. Same old world and everything, new life. And that's the experience you go through as a Christian and Clayton, you know. So I hear the same old. But in actuality, they're relating themselves to this, you know. It's like, you know, your mind, you know, perspective.
Yeah. Rob?
I'm just going to add that, you mentioned Solomon had been blessed greatly by God, and not only in wisdom, but just in a lot of areas as well.
Right, wealth, yeah.
Also, he accomplished a lot in his life, too. He'd done many things, he'd built many things. It seems like he's saying, wanted to do something new, something bigger and better, and it was just unsatisfying to me. He's like, what did I do all this for? What's the point of this? So he talks about nothing new under the sun. I think it kind of relates to his experience in that way.
Yeah, okay. Anybody else? Going back to some of what Shane talked about, I just wrote down just kind of teasers for myself. Cell phones, you know, most of us grew up without cell phones, but we got along fine, didn't we? Smart watches. I mean, my Timex went, you know, took a licking and kept on clicking or ticking. HD 4K... I mean, HD 4K color TVs. Who grew up without a TV? And some of us grew up with just black and white. Well, when we got color, we could watch Flipper in color. We thought that was big time, you know. So it's just a continuous thing. And after this HD 4K color TV, there's going to be an HD, I think, 8K already out, something like that. So smartphones change every year or so. So it's always something new, but it's the same old, right?
So. Regardless of what a man does, the same thing happens to them all.
Yeah.
They all die.
I brought another pair of reading glasses, and they broke a minute ago, so I had to go back to my old frames. Shane, I believe.
Well, I was going to say, a lot of commercials, but one commercial I saw recently that I thought, boy, there's actually a good concept there, which relates to this, is Ewan McGregor. He's walking along and he's saying, when you reach the end of your life, how many of us are going to say, we needed a bigger TV, we needed a smaller cell phone, we needed a better car, we needed a better, you know, and he goes through this list of stuff, and he's like, what your life needs, you don't need more stuff. And then, of course, it's a commercial for traveling, but
yeah.
He makes this very point, right?
Yeah.
He's basically saying every day there's a better TV, there's a better phone, there's a better car, there's a better whatever. And when you get to your end of your life, are you really going to say, I wish I'd have gotten the bigger house, the better TV, the better computer?
Yeah.
And to me, it relates right to what we're talking about here, because that's really what he's saying is life becomes this pursuit of the new, the great, the better, the prettier, the nicer. And that's all meaningless pursuit.
Yeah. But it weren't. But it Warren Buffett lives in the same house like 30 or 40 years.
Drives the same old pickup.
Well, Sam Walton drove an old pickup for a long time before he died. So, anyway, someone over here had their hand up. Marie? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Just like, you know, and that, and just the inevitability.
Yeah.
Of course, each, you know, the fascination with youth is probably greater, seems greater now than ever, and every new generation, they know it. They're going to do so much better than us. They're not going to make the mistakes we made. They're not going to, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, so it is. It just continues.
Yeah.
It makes sense what Solomon's saying.
Yeah. Anything else? Jared?
I was going to add a little bit. There's a lot of good inventions, new technology, like the safety wheelchair there. Robot gets them around or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So it can be, it's a free mind to think of that, you know.
Yeah, there's been a lot of good come out, don't get me wrong.
I understand.
But, yeah, but the point is that's only material and it's only going to last a certain amount of time. Till either it breaks or burns up or whatever. So, number 10. What does Solomon say about the world in the latter part of verse 9?
Nothing new.
Nothing new under the sun is likely what we've been talking about. So here's a question you don't have on your sheet. Why is there nothing new under the sun? And Shane answered it. If anybody wants to paraphrase what he said. No matter what we have, whatever the new thing is, there's going to be something newer, and all of the new stuff will eventually tear up, burn up, crash, go away, come outdated. I've got a TV sitting in my house right now I cannot use because it's a 24-inch CRT, and I don't have an HD converter for it, so I can't use it, right? Well, we do use it. We stack books on it. But I know none of y'all have anything like that. But
you're talking about commercials, and I think that was, I'm trying to remember the commercial, BM asked something like, we don't make the product, we make it better.
Yeah, yeah. Chemical company, I think, of some sort. Yeah. But most advertising you see, radio, TV, newspaper, whatever, what is it doing? What's the purpose of advertising?
Sell you something,
and usually what they have is better than what you used to have, right? A lot of it.
So the purpose is to make you dissatisfied.
Exactly.
With how you are now.
Exactly. Yeah.
You deserve.
You what?
You deserve.
Yeah, a break today, Kevin.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, nothing new under the sun, and when we can come up with ideas, they said, you know, hey, they didn't have computers back then, but they did have.
Yeah.
Recorded on there. They didn't, I mean, we could say, well, they didn't invent spacecraft to go to the moon or down to Mars or whatever. They did try to build the Tower of Babel.
Yeah.
They tried to reach
the
stars to heaven. So, you know, if you go literally, maybe you make an argument, but the same desires, goals, achievements, nothing new under the sun.
Yep. We're all selfish. Mankind has been selfish from day one. So, what humbling observation does Solomon make in verse 11?
You're forgettable.
Exactly. What does that mean, Deborah?
That means probably in 1 year, nobody will remember me or anything I've done or not done, much less in 300 years.
Yeah. And there are exceptions to that. We all know who George Washington was, Abraham Lincoln, people of history that really accomplished, really accomplished big things. But for Lynn Henley, living in Shalimar, Florida, 50 years from now, who's going to remember me? I mean, really?
We'll all be dead.
Exactly. I can't include y'all, most of you. Yeah, that table back there with the about teenagers and college kids, they won't remember me either. They said, oh, that's that dude that taught all them Bible classes that were so boring and so whatever.
Remembered you.
They did remember me, you're right.
They just remembered there was a porn class over there.
What's the military saying that when someone comes up for advancement, higher rank, whatever you call it, people sit around the meeting, they say, like looking over his record and says, well, I can't remember what he did, but it must have been something good when really he did a lot of bad things, but that's all they couldn't remember. You ever heard that joke?
Apparently not. But it sounds good.
All right. Number 12, what do you think we sometimes perceive? Well, I'm sorry. Why do you think we sometimes perceive something to be new?
Short-term memory.
Short-term memory, absolutely. We've forgotten what has happened in history. Does that ever happen today?
Those who fail to remember history are doomed to repeat it.
Exactly. I was listening to a podcast just the other day with Dr. Ben Carson and Phil Robertson. Dr. Carson made a statement, and I'm going to have to paraphrase it because I didn't write it down. But he said something about we need to be teaching our kids and the next generation history, good and bad. And he said even the slavery of 1700, 1800, they need to be learning that because it's going to repeat itself. And he used the example of sex slaves today as being a form of slavery. So, you know, we need to learn our history, good and bad. And when it's bad, hopefully we can learn something from that. So, any comments or questions?
Solomon does concentrate, the writer of Ecclesiastes. I'm going to refer
to writer R. Solomon most of the time.
Does concentrate, though, the meaningless part as to what human beings can come up with.
Yeah.
Does separate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Anytime we talk about vanity or vanity and meaningless and that sort of thing, we're talking about the human side. So, Shane?
I think, you know, when I read this, you know, one of the things I see is that a lot of times as people, we have this desire to be, like, significant, right? And so part of what I see here when I read this is this reinforcement of we may think we're somebody, we may think we're significant.
Yeah.
But the truth is, people have come, people have gone. You're going to come, you're going to go.
Yeah.
And you're going to pass away, and you're not going to be remembered.
Yeah.
And
that's a general statement, yeah. But yeah.
But I mean, as it stands.
Yeah.
Every human being is not going to be remembered for their great accomplishment.
Exactly.
And to me, what part of what he's saying is, if we put all our time and effort into trying to pursue to make ourselves significant in this world, then we're wasting our time.
Yeah.
Because that's not what's valuable.
Right. Absolutely.
So, Lynn, all those headstones that say never forgotten are lying?
Some degree, yeah. Yeah.
That's sad.
It is sad, but that's life. What is it in your family, no more than usually three generations down, nobody knows anybody? I mean, both of my grandfathers died before I was five, so I never knew them. But so I usually go back to my great-grandfather, and that's usually where we connect everything. But my children, they my dad is their granddad, but they didn't know my grandparents, you know, as their great-grandparents. Y'all following what I'm trying to say here? I mean, I have pictures of my great-great-grandfather, but only because he's kind of the bone of our family. When I meet a Henley, and I say, does Mike Henley mean anything to you? And you say, yeah, he was my great-grandfather, or great-great, and we're related. But other than that, no. Jared?
I was going to say, remembrance is a general type of remembrance. You know, I think God gives us certain remembrances so that we learn and remember.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that's part of the Bible. I mean, that's why he gave us the Old Testament to go along with the New Testament, So hopefully we'll learn some of this Old Testament mistakes that these folks made. So.
Because the Old Testament in volume is so much greater. And if we take that wisdom that has passed and apply to our lives, we don't have to go through, because salvation, it doesn't take that much.
Right.
It's actually simple. So you don't need that much. But if you go back and look at history and
yeah.
just talk about it,
yeah.
that can help us out a lot.
Yeah. What is it? What did Gary and Larry make? It's like 30 or 35% of the Old Testament is either stated word for word or in paraphrase in the New Testament, and something like
yeah,
that.
It's a high percentage of it. That
yeah.
They also quote extra canonical books.
Anyway, yeah. So. Yeah. So in conclusion, the author of Ecclesiastes asked the question that will be answered in the course of this sermon: what profit does a man have from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? Under the sun, everything runs in cycles. Nothing is permanent and lasting, and therefore nothing is ultimately fulfilling. Ecclesiastes is a worship book. It declares that worship is about a life given to something, and anything that I give my life to under the sun will simply bring frustration. I can only find fulfillment beyond the sun. Charles Swindoll, sometimes you know him, may know him as Chuck Swindoll, commenting on this first chapter of Ecclesiastes, says, "Life on planet Earth isn't a great big bowl of cherries, it's the pits. It is boring, it is empty, it is a grind, it is a chasing after the wind. But instead of blaming God, realize he had a reason for our horizontal lives being so void of purpose. Life has difficulties and circumstances that seem at times to be completely senseless. As we move through Ecclesiastes, we'll find Solomon honestly questioning God on this very issue. However, it's often through experience and difficulty that the greatest growth of our faith occurs." And when Chuck Swindoll was talking about horizontal lives, what is he talking about? What is a horizontal relationship? What did you say, Roger?
Just mundane.
Oh, okay. Horizontal is our relationship man to man. Man to man. Vertical is our relationship with God. So when Chuck Swindoll was talking about he had a reason for our horizontal lives being so void of purpose, he's talking about our relationship with each other. Not that our relationships are not important. At some point, they're going to fade away on earth. So, all right. Time is up. Anybody have any final comments or questions? Next week we'll finish chapter 1 and go start into chapter 2. I encourage you to read it ahead of time because that is a lengthy reading and we may or may not be able to read it in class. So, have a blessed week. Be safe. Stay warm or stay cool.
Stay
warm. Be warm.